Hi, everyone. This is Mel.
And this is Jill.
And this is Mel and Jill Geek Out. Hey, Jill.
Hi, Mel.
How's it going?
It's going.
How's your weekend been so far?
I had to do yard work.
That's not a vibe.
No.
It's not a vibe. I did not do very many chores this weekend, mostly because I might have gone to Fall Out Boy.
I remember you sent me a picture at the very beginning. Were you in the audience when he was like calling out somebody with the chicken wings or something?
No, that was not our show.
Dang it.
But there was somebody very close up on the floor who was in a wolf costume. So that person got called out. Oh. And I will just say, like, it was so hot in there. I was sweating so much. It was crazy.
It was so hot in there.
But Fall Out Boy was great. Jimmy Eat World was amazing. Like, great night. Super fun time.
That sounds like a good time.
And then I couldn't talk super unmanly like from all of the singing along and screaming I did.
I think that was us also after the Taylor Swift concert as well.
Oh, 100%. It's just kind of like status quo.
Yeah.
And then we also had the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix this weekend.
We did.
I wish I hadn't switched from Carlos Sainz and just taken the sub.
Yeah, I don't know why everybody did that, honestly.
Because you just never know.
No, because if it's just if it's appendicitis, he'll be back.
He'll be back. Here's the thing. I had only just picked him, so it wasn't a penalty for me to switch him for someone else. But Ollie did better than the person I put in.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually enjoyed watching the race. It was definitely interesting to see Alpine do as poorly as they're doing.
Oh, my goodness. Like, Alpine just... I kind of feel bad for Gasly and Ocon because, like, that car is shit. Like, Gasly didn't get... He didn't get to do one lap.
No. Almost immediately.
That's just so disappointing.
I'm sure it is. I genuinely... But they weren't that bad last year. Like, the car is just...
They weren't abysmal. Great last year.
I mean, they weren't great, but I mean, it's arguably the year before they were better, but I mean, it just seemed like it was just abysmally bad. Like, real bad.
Everybody was concerned about Red Bull, and Red Bull did just fine.
I saw a hat that I almost bought. Anyone but Max.
He did win his 100th Grand Prix this weekend, though.
Yay for him.
It's not his fault he's good. It's not his fault the car is fast.
I know.
I know it's not exciting for the race fans, though.
I also saw a TikTok, which I think is phenomenal. You put the little tape over the top one and then you just watch the rest of the grid, which is kind of how I feel. So, you know,
I mean, kind of fair. Yeah, it's also only two races into the season, so who knows what will happen. It does seem like he didn't win by quite as large of a margin, margin.
Not quite as much. Yeah. It was better.
Was it 20 seconds?
I have hope. I really do. I have hope that the other teams will bring some upgrades, that it's not as bad.
Quite so distant.
Yeah.
From each other. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I, you know what? I'm just going to be happy that Alonzo scored me so very many points in fantasy. Yeah. But I did drop down. There was a big shuffle in our fantasy league.
It was a big shuffle. It was a
big shuffle. So
it was, I dropped down a couple places. I think I dropped down like four places, but
yeah.
I expected to drop because I kept signs. So I didn't do terrible. I didn't do great, but
no, I mean, yeah. I have plans for how I'm going to build my fantasy league team to be better.
Mark was watching last year's Australian GP. I think that's what's next. Whichever one is next. I think it's Australia. But he was watching last year's. He was like, see who knows the track better. Like,
sure.
We'll see.
So, do you want to get into today's episode, Part 6 of Iron Flame?
Yeah,
Part 6.
Let's do it.
All right. So, again, spoiler warning. If I go into super spoilery territory, I'll make sure to add in the jingle.
Yes.
So, we're going to pick up at Chapter 20. Violet has just arrived at Samara to visit Zayden, aka Taryn and Sagale, visiting each other. She's walking in and Zayden sees her from like across the courtyard and like starts mind talking with her of being like, if you want to have any alone time with me right now, you have to ask me to kiss you. And she's like, what? And ultimately ends up saying yes. And they kind of make out a little bit in the courtyard, and it's just like must have been so uncomfortable for everyone else around them.
Yeah, a little bit. It's like, Jesus, because, Christ, get a fucking room.
Yeah, Mira, we find out, has also been reassigned to Samara, and this is why Zayden was like, she was gonna force you to be in her room with her, so if you wanted to spend time with me, you needed to make that like abundantly clear. And at some point, Mira has the great line of, he practically swallowed you.
I forgot about that.
Which is just a great line.
It is.
Yeah, just an amazingly great line. But one of the things, she's carrying a bag of daggers. And when she talks about the bag of daggers, she says that the bags are heavy, weirdly, vibrating with energy. Guess these ones have already been imbued with power. Because we know that the daggers are made of the same alloy as the ward stones and all of that kind of stuff. So it's interesting that we're starting to get some descriptions of things as we get a little bit deeper into it. There's less question marks happening.
Mm-hmm.
Which I always appreciate. I don't like guessing things. So Zayden has to go to like flight patrol, and so Mira and Violet get some time together, and they go and they're throwing knives together, and they talk a little bit about the wards, because Mira's signet is tied to the wards. She sort of can extend the wards with her when she goes past them.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mira starts talking, and they get on the subject that the power of of the wards lies in the hatching grounds and the veil, and then they're boosted along the perimeter and extended through the use of the alloy. And some of this Mira is just confirming what Violet has already read in all of her research. They start talking, and Mira is like, Violet asks about how they imbue the alloy with power. And she's like, that is above your clearance. And like, Mira is starting to get a little bit sus about some of the things that Violet is asking about. And Violet then brings up one of the Poor Amish cities getting like in its attack on it, getting brought up in Battle Brief, which we know about. And Mira was like, well, I was actually like on duty and I know that there was a riot there because I saw dragons in the distance. And Violet's like, oh God, those weren't dragons. Those were Fennin with wyverns. Oh shit. So Violet's going through all of these things. Like she knows all of these things and she desperately, desperately wants to tell Mira. She wants to tell Mira that Brennan is alive, that she wants to make sure Mira knows everything. So she's fighting on the right side. Like she just so badly wants to tell her sister what's going on.
Yeah. But she's in the same boat that she is with her friends. Like, you can't. You can't.
Yeah. And she even tries to hint to Mira that it could have been wyverns. And it doesn't hit. Mira doesn't pick up what she's putting down. So she sort of excuses it with not sleeping well. And Mira's like kind of relieved with that excuse. And then it's like, oh, well, we'll get you some tea that'll help out. So Zayden comes back late at night and she's asleep in his bed. And they kind of talk about, she's like, there is no one in my life right now I'm completely honest with. And they talk about her keeping the secret of her like research into the wards. And he's like, yeah, you intentionally put that between us because you felt like you needed to. They're slowly starting to have the pieces of the conversations that they've needed to have for like the 200 pages we already are into this book.
Yeah. It's like
slowly.
I feel like they should have happened way sooner.
Yeah. And she asks him point blank, like, what is the alloy made out of? And he lists off all of the ingredients. I don't remember exactly what they are, but like he really does just like, oh, it's all of these things. She's like, oh, you answered me. He's like, yeah, you asked a motherfucking question, you idiot.
Yeah. Yeah, that was very annoying. It's like, maybe ask.
Just fucking ask. And so there's this one moment and it goes into a theory I have.
Okay.
She says, Zayden could never understand. He doesn't have a sister. I feel like there's a lot of foreshadowing in these books. And I might have to insert spoiler warning here. Spoiler warning jingle enters now.
Jingle, jingle.
Jingle, jingle. So we learn later in this book that Zayden's mother essentially had him, raised him until he was like 10 or something like that, and then dipped out. What if Zayden isn't an only child? And what if Zayden has a half sibling or two or three? Maybe he does have a sister. Maybe he has a brother. Maybe his mom isn't as out of the picture as we think she is.
I mean, it's possible.
I just feel like we're getting dropped enough nuggets to like, there's something there. There's it's something
very
there.
Possible. Very possible.
All right. End of crazy theory by Melissa. P.S. I found where I marked what the ingredients are for the alloy. It's an amalgamation of Tellurium, a few other ores, and dragon shell eggs or dragon egg shells.
Dragon egg shells. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because apparently dragon eggs are metal, is what he goes on to say. I don't know. It means that the dragons participate in some amount in the creating of the wards, despite what Taryn said. They are not little humans walking into the hatchling grounds picking up pieces of eggshell without the dragons being fully aware and okay with what's going on.
I mean, maybe that they're aware of it, but that's not, I don't consider that helping. That's just allowing them to pick up a piece of egg.
I don't know. if I was a dragon, I would be sus about why they want pieces of my egg.
But yeah, they know it's the word stones.
For the words? Yeah, but I would be sus. I would have a lot of questions if I was a dragon.
Well, I didn't say they weren't going to have questions. I just... Who wouldn't have questions?
So if they have questions, like, they probably know. I feel like the dragons know way more than what they're letting on.
Oh, agreed. But I'm just, you know, I don't think allowing them to take the eggshells is helping.
Enough.
I wouldn't classify that as helping.
I guess.
So she goes back to Basgaiath, and it's a couple of days later, and she hears they're going into battle brief, or no, they're going to history class, excuse me. And Riddick comes in and says a bunch of the leadership was running out to the flight field because there was a major attack in East Nevers. So these attacks are happening more often, and they're getting closer and closer to Basgaiath. Like, this is sus. So instead of their normal professor, they get Professor Devera, who is the one you and I like and have thoughts about maybe being on our side of the equation.
Yep, I think so.
Yes. So she is the one teaching history class, and this brings up an interesting conversation because they're supposed to be talking about some like random like 3-day rebellion that no one gives a shit about. Oh, before I get into that, one dragon rider has died in this attack in East Nevers, and it was someone by the name of, hang on, Mason, who apparently was at Aspen. So finally, Violet makes the connection of, like, was this whole attack a cover-up for an assassination attempt, or was it real?
I don't know.
Yep. We're in that territory of, like, I don't trust shit. Anyways, back to the history lesson. So they're supposed to talk about like some arbitrary thing, and it's like, yeah, it has to do with like people not wanting to unify, blah, blah, blah. But it ends up sparking this conversation of what did we gain through unification and what did we lose? I feel like this is a really interesting conversation that they have, where they talk about how they lost language and they lost folklore and culture and all of these things. And some of the other writers are just like poo-pooing it, like, oh, everything they had has been translated into common language, so it's fine. And Violet is the one who brings up, like, actually, in the archives, they only go back 400 years, so everything the archive has is like 7th or 8th editions. And unless there was an entire like gigantic scribe quadrant working round the clock transcribing this, not everything has been transcribed from these other languages.
Yeah.
And even in that translation, things are lost. So it's an interesting that we talked about this not that long ago, and it's getting brought up again.
I wonder...
if it might be foreshadowing.
Maybe.
Remember. So then they go to combat training. It's a little challenge things. And Dane kind of tries to talk to Violet, and she like totally cold shoulders him. Is like, I don't want to fucking talk to you. Get the fuck out of my face. Like, I hate everything about you. And he does not take no for an answer, because he ends up challenging her to combat. And she, by the way, has a dislocated shoulder during all of this from trying to do running landings, yeah, which have gone not great for her.
No.
And she, during their confrontation on the mat, ends up being like, I'll never forgive you for taking my memory. You are the reason why Liam and Day died. Like, she kind of just goes into it on him. And he clearly is, she's like, you said goodbye. And he's like, I meant like, he says, I'll miss you. And he's like, because you chose Zayden over me, not because I knew what was going to happen. And it's like, did you not know what's going to happen? You went to your fucking dad. It's just sketchy already. He's like, well, I only saw like the part where he said that he had told you that he and someone else had gone to Athben. And I knew that that was like outside of flight protocols for second or for third years and did it. And I'm like, dude,
this big fucking tattletale.
Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up.
Still hate Dane.
Yeah, still hate Dane. So he ultimately like taps out, even though he has like the power position, because he was just so desperate to have this conversation with her. But in all of this, there's a couple of things that are revealed. He's like, well, you don't know anything about Zayden. She's like, yes, I fucking do. Because she honestly does know some stuff about him. And he's like, well, do you know about the scars on his back? She's like, oh, yeah, the 107 for the lives he took responsibility for. He's like, do you know who did them? And she's like, caught up short because she has never asked that and just does not know. And Dane is the one who tells her it was her mother who gave Zayden the 107 scars on his back.
Yep.
I feel like you think this is a big point in your column of
no, not necessarily. I just remember.
I think that there's more to this story.
I'm sure there's more to the story, but I think like if you remember, there was like a, I can't remember the quote, but either in the beginning of the book or last book, he was like talking to the mother about, he was like, oh, I've more than done. Mm-hmm. So I can't remember. And I'm like, I've
more than proved myself to you or something along those lines.
Yeah. I feel like this may be a nod to that. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I feel like there's definitely more to this story that we might find out in this book or in future books. But it was an interesting exchange of information. Now, when she gets off the mat, she's trying to be like, I'm fine. And Rhiannon is pissed at this point. She's like, I overheard what you said in history class about the assassination attempt. What the fuck? You've been pissed at Dane this whole time. All you've given me is that he stole something from you, but you won't report him. And so she lets it. Like, she doesn't tell Rhiannon everything, but she says that Dane took a memory from her and that there have been multiple attempts on people who were in Athben. And Rhiannon is putting two and two together.
Yeah.
But then Eric, however you want to pronounce it.
Eric.
Does his challenge and ends up breaking his wrist but winning, and so he and Violet go down to the healer's quadrant to get him fixed up. And in this conversation, because she knows who he really is, she might be the only person other than Dane who knows who he really is, and they have this conversation about why is he here, and he's like, why do you think I'm here? And she figures out that he knows. And she's like, how did you figure it out? And he's like, as soon as my guards started carrying Tyrish blades, I knew.
Yeah.
And so we learn that he is somebody who is intentionally in the quadrant because he wants to fight against the Venom. So I thought that was interesting.
I would like freaked out for a second. Like, his initial reaction was like, oh shit. It's like, is this going to be a good thing or a bad thing here?
It ultimately shows up to kind of be a bit of a neutral thing.
Yeah.
For now. I think Eric is potentially getting teed up to be not like a minor character, not like a main character, but like an important character.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we don't get a ton of him in this book. That brings us to chapter 22. And it opens with Violet having a dream about being on a battlefield and running across the field, trying to get to Tarn. And then Andarna is there. She's being chased by the sage. And the sage is trying to get her to join the Venon. And she's like super not on board with this. And then she wakes up when the sage is like trying, like killing all the land and then like sucking her power out of her. And the sage says something interesting of having waited centuries for someone with this power, with her power.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of this dream?
It reminds me of kind of like the Harry Potter dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's got some weird connection. And he can see through Voldemort because it's very prophetic to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where would that come from? That's like literally not ever been a thought of hers. So where would that have come from? So something is causing it. I don't know if there's I'm not saying she necessarily has like a specific, you know, weird connection with them, but they're clearly able to speak to her somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's interesting for a lot of reasons. One is her lightning signet that rare? I know it's definitely not a common signet, but has it really been a century since there'd been somebody with that power? I don't remember from Fourth Wing, honestly.
But I feel like it was rare. However, we don't necessarily know if he's referring to that signet.
That's true.
He could be referring to her second signet, which we still do not know technically what it is, even though it's supposedly on page.
Yeah. So according to Rebecca Yarros, if you're paying attention to this book, Violet's second signet does manifest in this book.
But we still don't know what it is.
There's not confirmation from Rebecca about what her second signet is. I think, again, spoiler territory, maybe it's something attached to these dreams, because this is just the first one we've had described to us on page.
Mm-hmm.
More of these are to come.
Yes.
So interesting. So she wakes up, obviously not great. And so she's talking to Zayden when he is there, and she's talking about how she's trying to locate a firsthand account from one of the six. And this is where she's trying to get to in all of this research. So he's like, I don't think that's a bad idea. It might be a little bit challenging. She's like, I remember my dad talking about one. So it's obviously like, one exists.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Fucking hell. So Zayden makes the brilliant decision to take her to Bazgaia's forge to explain more about the rebel weapons and the wards and things like that. However, on their way down, they run into Professor Grady and Major Varish, who happened to also have Riddick and Sawyer and Rhiannon, because it's time for interrogation lesson numero uno. And it is not great initially, because Zayden's like, fuck no, she's still hurt because from her shoulder.
Yeah.
He's like, you're not supposed to do this when they're hurt. And they're like, yeah, I don't give a shit. And she finally is like, okay, you got to just like let this. She like literally like taps into Sigale and is like, Sigale, you need to have him like back the fuck off or else this is going to get real ugly real fast. And so that ends up happening, and they take them all down to the interrogation scene, to the interrogation chambers, which are actually not that hidden, we learn. They're just like in the side of a mountain.
Yeah.
All I thought was like, have you seen North by Northwest, the Alfred Hitchcock film?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. And so the part where like the secret lair is inside of Mount Rushmore.
Oh, yeah.
That's literally what I imagine.
That, but if we were going to go with like Secret Lair and Mount Rushmore, my mind went to Richie Rich, not the Alfred Hitchcock movie.
Fair. Fair. It's not as bougie as in North by Northwest.
No.
But anyways, that brings us to chapter 23. And so they bring Violet, Rhiannon, Reddick, and Sawyer into this classified room. And they're going to be spending the weekend getting interrogated. And they're told if they manage to escape, which no one has done in like a decade, then they get a special patch. So, of course, Riddick's like, bet, I want that patch.
Yeah.
It's Riddick, and that's like literally the only thing he like connects to. And so they're all left in the room with some biscuits and some juice and told... They're all given like a secret code sentence, and they're supposed to tell each other a personal secret.
No.
Which puts Violet in an uncomfy spot because she's got a lot of secrets. None of them she can tell. So Rhiannon tells them about how she and Violet snuck out in year one and went and visit her family. Riddick's is he's terrified of snakes, which is not a great secret, but they accept it. I found that
hilarious. Absolutely, because you know it's going to come up later.
Oh, yeah. Some kind of snake situation's going to happen. He's going to scream like a little girl, and it's just going to be a nice little comedic relief moment.
It's a whole Indiana Jones scene where he opens
Why
up.
Why did it have to be snakes?
Snakes.
So Sawyer's is that he never told his family that he had to repeat year one. Aww. They just didn't even question why it took him 2 years to write. They just thought they don't let first or second years write home. I know. And so Violet shares something that she learned in Samara with Zayden, which is the outpost infantry unit killed Pormish civilians trying to cross the border. And none of them knew stuff like that was happening.
I feel like that was a real big secret to tell. Like, and one she probably should not have going into interrogation. It's like, fucking, we were just talking about being afraid of snakes. Like, way to be a Debbie Downer. Maybe not right before you go into interrogation, because like the minute they hear that nugget, it's going to be like, well, how do you know that?
Well, why? She explains that she saw it in Samara.
Just saying still, but like I'm saying it's going to lead to like the interrogator to ask more questions, and it's going to lead to more shit. Not them.
100%. Like, yeah. What a secret to give. I would have been like, oh, I have armor that I wear every day that my sister made from her dragon's scales.
Yeah.
Because not everyone knows, like, Rhiannon knows about it, but, like, not everyone knows about it.
Yeah.
And Rhiannon doesn't know where the scales came from, what it's made out of.
I would have gone something way trivial. I would have gone the route of snakes or something to the effect of that. Like, real dumb move.
Yeah. So I recite passages of books to myself when I'm stressed out. Yeah, like something trivial. That's not what happens. But before anyone drinks, Violet fucking learns a lesson. And I'm so excited. She smells the juice and realizes that the special elixir that cuts them off from their dragons and dulls their signets is in this thing. So all of them are like, nope, they pour it out. They don't drink it. And she's just like, we can live for 3 days without water. don't drink anything they give us. It's fine. We have to pretend like we're cut off from our dragons, which is exactly what they do. And they bring him into the actual torture chamber and they line up Rhiannon, Sawyer, and Riddick on the wall and chain them to the stone wall. And they put, of course, Violet in the chair and proceed to bring in two interrogators and beat the shit out of all of them.
Yeah.
For hours.
Yeah.
But no one breaks.
Which is awesome.
Which is great. But we get a little surprise visitor in the form of Varish, mm-hmm. who comes in with Dane.
Oh, yeah. I saw that coming a mile away.
Same. I wasn't surprised that Dane was going to come in. I think the part that took me by surprise is that what Carr is to Violet is what Varish is to Dane. The way that Carr is trying to like mentor her into being better at her signet, that's what Varish is doing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of scary.
Yeah.
I would not put him in an academic setting overlooking any kind of student, child, or young adult. Doesn't matter. I don't want to create more Varishes. He seems like a douche canoe.
Definitely.
It's bad. It's really bad. So that brings us to chapter 24. And I'm going to read the little snippet at the beginning. Brandon Sanderson said whatever this word is, but I don't remember like what these pieces are actually called, but I don't remember. So, every few years, a squad comes along that defies all expectations. They rise the ranks, secure every patch, win every challenge, and then they inexplicably falter, then fall. They call it the burnout effect. They flare too fast, too bright to sustain the pace. Sad, really, but mildly entertaining to watch them turn on one another. And this is from Major Afrenda's Guide to the Writer's Quadrant, the unauthorized edition.
I like that, the unauthorized edition.
To me, this is major, major, major foreshadowing for our four squad kids.
Oh, yeah.
Are they going to beat the burnout effect or are they going to fall victim of it? I mean, they already got Iron Squad.
Yep. I mean, I think these kids are focused on some other things and they just happen to get them. But I agree. Lots of foreshadowing.
Lots of foreshadowing. I want it to be like Team Avatar where they all come together and like save the world and everything's fine. I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah. We'll see. I guess it depends on how long it takes.
Well, I mean, there's three more books to go. So. A lot. Anyways, so we jump back into the scene and Violet is just terrified. She tries to warn Tarn, but there's not anything because Zayden's still there. But like. She's like, oh, shit, what am I going to do? And she's like trying to fortify her mental shield and everything. But she also knows that Zayden can't come rescue her because it's exactly what Varish wants. He wants to prove that they're not actually cut off from their dragons.
Yeah.
So Dane ultimately ends up refusing citing the codex.
Yeah.
Being like, she's hurt. I'm not going to do it. And like storms off. But we also get this little tidbit. About part of the reason why Nolan is so busy is because apparently they've been bringing in a lot of civilians for Dane to practice on. And who knows what the fuck Varish is also doing to them.
I'm sure he's doing lots of little tidbits.
I'm sure he's doing wonderful, kind things to them.
Yeah.
Really wonderful, kind things. So... Bears, they all like get knocked out. They wake up in the morning And they find out that Varish has extended their interrogation, which is not normal, and clearly plans to do some more shit to them.
Yeah.
And Nolan is there.
Yeah. The fact that this guy gets to do whatever the fuck he wants, like, totally unchecked, completely blows my mind.
Right? Like, in what world?
Yeah.
In what world are they completely unchecked? But anyways, Nolan is there. He was brought in to heal Violet so that they could break her again. He's clearly not super on board with this plan, though, because he kind of intentionally makes sure that they're listening at the door and leaves this little window in their door open so Rhiannon and Violet can hear him talking to Varish, where he confirms that the other interrogators are not there right now. And he also convinces Varish to come with them to check on this mystery patient that Nolan has been working on, leaving a window open for Violet, Rhiannon, Riddick, and Sawyer to escape. I know, because they didn't drink the potion. They all have full use of their signets, and no offense, Violet's is kind of useless indoors, so she's not very helpful right now.
Yeah.
But Riddick's ice ability and Sawyer's metal bending abilities come in very handy.
Very.
They essentially melt off the hinges of the first door. I mean, you're able to get through it. Get to the next door. Not really sure what to do here because they don't know if they can do that same trick again. But then one of the discs on Violet's daggers does something odd. It unlocks the door.
Dun, dun, dun.
It feels warm and then it unlocks the door. And then they're able to escape.
Oh, goodness.
Mm-hmm. What did you think at that moment of like, oh, a knife randomly unlocked a door? What?
I don't have any expectations other than weird shit's going to happen. So, of course, a dagger magically unlocks the door.
Clearly. Clearly. Yeah.
Of course that happens.
So it's a couple days later. And we're going to start chapter 25. And they're in battle brief, but there's a new pamphlet that gets dropped. I'm going to read you what this pamphlet says.
Here we go.
Zolia falls to Dragonfire. The third largest city in the Bravik province has fallen to the blue fire dragons and their riders. Though the city and its drifts fought valiantly, the two-day battle ended in Purimish defeat. All who did not evacuate have perished. An estimated 10,000 lives have been lost, including General Fenella, the commander of Bravik's Griffin fleet. All trade routes to the city have been barricaded to prevent further loss of life.
Jesus.
Very serious situation.
Yeah.
So obviously everyone turns to Violet as a wannabe scribe for most of her life. And she deduces that this isn't the normal typeset of a official missive. It doesn't have the seal and the ink has not cured on the paper. So that means that this was printed at Basgaiath.
Mm-hmm.
Someone at Basgaiath has intentionally printed this and put this into battle brief. And while everyone is reeling from this, Professor Markham comes in and through some classic techniques of distract, you know, deny, you know, all of that kind
deflect.
Of stuff. Deflect. Yes, he gets them to pass all of these papers in and he's like, plus window. His big explanation is like, we don't attack outside the borders. It's like, well, Violet doesn't think it was dragons. Two, he's like, oh, when do we ever send out just a wing of blue, like just a ride of blue dragons only? Never. Now everyone's questioning what the blue was referencing to. Was it blue dragons? Was it blue fire? What did it say? They don't have it anymore in their hands to reference. And then he distracts them with a pretty big fucking announcement.
Which is?
Guess who's fucking alive?
Jack fucking Barlow.
Yep. The mystery patient has been revealed. Nolan has spent all of this time curing Jack from having a mountain dropped on him during war games.
That really, like, I don't think I saw that one coming. I can't remember.
I didn't anticipate that. I was very annoyed when it happened because now we have to live by the rule of, like, unless you see the dead body, they're not dead.
Yeah. Yeah. Because a mountain fell on him.
Of course he died. A literal mountain fell on him.
Yeah. Like, what do you have to revive? Like, that's the thing.
Like, his bones would have been, like, mush.
Yeah. He'd be flat.
Yeah. I don't understand. And I think we probably should have deduced something was up when we ran into Bane in the forest.
Probably.
We should have been like, Bane seems too fine for this, but Lordy Jesus Christ. So he comes in to literally thundering applause from the quadrant.
Gross. Which, does everybody not remember that he was a fucking psychopath?
Apparently not. Riddick's like, I guess we'll just have to kill him again.
Okay. Yep. Let's just add that back to the checklist.
Mm-hmm.
List.
mm-hmm. And that's where we're going to end this episode. With the reveal of Jack motherfucking Barlow being back.
Yay.
No, not yay.
Oh, man. It's a good place to end, though.
It's a great place to end. I might have planned it that way.
Just a little bit.
How are you feeling? You know, we're 25 book or chapters into this book now. We're 230 some odd pages in.
No, I mean, I kind of maintain what I said before. Like, I liked Fourth Wing. It's not as much as other things that I read.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still not totally loving Iron Flame. Like, it's, I don't dislike it. I just wish it was a little bit better. Like, we talked about this ad nauseum.
Yeah, I think we're starting to get closer to the meatier parts of this book. This book's opening third is so much setup, so repetitive. We're finally getting to the part where I care about what's happening. Like, the plot is finally progressing forward.
Starting it's to move,
not
yeah.
so much like Violet is mad at Zayden for lying and existing and doing things that, like, she probably would have done herself if she was in his shoes and, like, all that kind of nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like we're gonna about to start getting into the meat and potatoes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. we're there. When you bring back a character, everyone was fairly confident was super dead.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like living in a world where, like, I have to watch for the dead body, though.
No, I don't like that.
It just makes it, like, it just doesn't make any death feel significant. Because this was a big moment for her in Fourth Wing. Mm-hmm. The fact that, like, A, this is the moment, the first time her signet manifested. B, she did it to protect herself and Liam and a bunch of other people. And it was the first time she ever made a killing blow. It was an important character progression moment for Violet, preparing her to be able to step into war. And now all of that has been taken away because he's not actually dead.
Yeah. We're going to learn more about him.
We do learn some more about good old fucking Jack Barlow.
Any final thoughts?
Still, that I was really mad when this happened. All of those reasons and more. Because I just didn't want to deal with him anymore.
Yeah.
I'm like, he didn't get barbecued, but he got a mountain dropped on top of him. That is satisfactory death to me.
Yeah.
And then it was just like taken all away from us. I didn't like it. I didn't like the bait and switch.
Yeah. Me either. It's no fun. No.
What about you? Any final thoughts?
No. No. We'll just have to wait till next time.
We'll just have to wait till next time. Well, thank you all so much for listening. If you want to check out what is coming up next on the pod, be sure to give us a follow over on Instagram. It's Mel and Jill Geek Out. Or if you have a suggestion of what we should geek out about next, you can shoot us an email over at jillandmelgeekout@gmail.com. Again, my name is Melissa.
And I'm Jill.
And this has been Mel and Jill Geek Out. Bye, guys.
Bye.